You're listening to Engage with Andy Bush. To connect with the program today, please send an email to andrew.bush@comcast.net. That's andrew.bush@comcast.net. Now, back to this week's program.
Welcome back to Engage. We continue our discussion on regulations by now turning to the banking sector and the impact of Dodd-Frank. Our next guest is Rob Nichols. Mr. Nichols is the president and CEO of the Financial Services Forum. Now, the forum is a nonpartisan financial and economic policy organization, and it's comprised of the CEOs of the 18 largest financial services institutions doing business in the United States. So it's got a great perspective on what's happening in that sector. Obviously, it's key for what's going on in the U.S. economy. Welcome, Rob.
Hey, Andy. It's so great to be on with you.
Yeah, this is the fourth year since Dodd-Frank was enacted, and you know we're looking for some perspective here on Engage. How successful was this law in ensuring that another Lehman-like event will not happen?
Well, Andy, we kind of look at Dodd-Frank as kind of the good, the bad, and the ugly, in that there are aspects of this law that make sense, that probably will help strengthen the financial sector and make it more safe, more sound, more secure. However, there were also parts of it that were not needed and probably an overreaction to aspects of the crisis, or were kind of misguided responses. And then there were some pieces that were just left out that because of either complexity or lack of bandwidth, Congress was not able to get to those things. So kind of a mixed bag. There absolutely were some pieces of this that made sense, that were important. And then there were other pieces, Andy, that were a little kind of a head-scratcher looking at it from the financial sector standpoint. I think the overall, though, message to your listeners is here, 4 years later, as a result of the industry-initiated changes, as a result of some changes in the law, and as a result of a lot of regulatory changes, the whole financial sector and the individual institutions, particularly the banks, are more safe, more sound, more secure, more resilient, and more transparent. And there's a lot of ways we look at that in terms of capital, in terms of liquidity, the stress test, the living wills. You know, there have been a lot of changes, and I think that's probably the biggest takeaway 4 years later. Ironically, as part of that takeaway, you have some people who are still, you know, advancing this narrative that suggests that nothing has changed and things are just as bad as they were pre-crisis.
Right, and that's kind of hard to believe considering the capital inside of the largest financial institutions has just about doubled, right?
It has. The capital and liquidity levels have doubled. You know, prop desks are gone. There's now a mechanism to resolve a large financial institution. Of course, pre-crisis, there was a mechanism to take down a small state bank, but not a large globally active one. Mm-hmm. So a lot of work's been done, not just here, but overseas with the regulators to come up with a coordinated manner so that we could take down a large institution without putting any taxpayer money on the hook, and without causing, you know, massive impacts to the capital markets. That's good. You know, the whole point is here, we want to see, Andy, bankruptcy, not bailouts. No one wants to see a bailout ever again. Certainly no one representing the financial sector. Certainly not the American taxpayer. You know, or the U.S. Congress. So that's I think the key piece. One of the key pieces is we can never have another bailout again. And a lot of work so far has been done to move us in a direction so that won't happen.
Well, and those are great points. I mean, and there's still, I'm thinking of all the ugly things that have kind of come through with some of these regulations. And one of them still to this day surprises me, which is putting all the interest rate swaps on an exchange, because we somewhat have shifted from the prop desks, which is what Volcker Rule focuses on, to now whether or not those institutions like the Chicago Mercantile Exchange are now becoming too big to fail, because if there's any problem, there's so much issues there that you absolutely have to make sure that those exchanges stay up and running. But let me just focus on one kind of aspect that I think a lot of people in this country don't understand, is that the new regulations, I mean, it seems that they're a pretty heavy burden. We talked about the increase in capital, because they not only have taken away the profitable trading business and maybe a little risky stuff that banks were doing for sure under the Volcker Rule, but they also have significantly increase the cost of capital due to the increase in regulatory mandates of higher reserves. I mean, how has this impacted banks and the financial institutions' ability to lend?
See, there is a direct correlation, Andy, as you well know, between capital levels and lending. And so there have been a number of papers and a number of studies that have come out, you know, lately that have suggested there's a depression on the ability of these institutions to lend, you know, a headwind, so to speak. And that's something that's very challenging that the U.S. policymakers are dealing with, because we're still, you know, we've had a couple of economic indicators, as you know, that have been encouraging. But that said, our economy is still in a state of fragility, obviously. And the last thing we want to do is have over-regulation stifle economic growth and the ability for our economy to grow at its full potential. In Europe, the debate now has shifted even ahead of ours. The European policymakers are saying, hey, we think some of this policy might be restrictive and harming growth, and we need to look at it a second time. We're not quite there yet here in the United States, but clearly and there have been a number of academic papers saying that there is a drag on economic growth associated with capital, with these, you know, regulatory requirements going really, really far. So that's one piece of there's other pieces of unintended consequence associated with the policy response, but that's one key one, obviously.
Well, and just for the audience, this is one of the things that is really important. It sounds like regulations and Dodd-Frank and all this stuff is like, who cares? You should care, and here's why. We have had slower growth over the last 5 years coming out of the Great Recession than anyone could have anticipated. And because of all the regulations that have been layered on since Dodd-Frank, since 2010, growth still hasn't taken off to the extent that it could have. One of the reasons I believe, and a lot of other people believe, is because the mechanism to get capital back into the economy has been depleted, or the mechanism, I should say, is somewhat, you know, impaired because of the capital being held back by banks. And in case you don't think this is still important, take a look at Europe, because Europe is going through what they call the AQR, asset quality review, for all of their banks, and all of their banks are holding back from lending because of this new regulatory push by the European Central Bank. So, and they're in really slow growth, almost in a deflationary standpoint right now. So they're struggling with that. So I think, Rob, to your point of what you just said, European policymakers are looking at this. They should be looking at it, because it's really a problem.
They're worried about it. They have, their headwinds are more significant than ours, so they are looking at ways to spur growth. And one of the things they're discussing is, did we go too far on cracking down on the financial sector and on banks? Did we do too much, which does periodically happen, you know, when after a crisis, that the regulatory pendulum goes too far the other direction. Yeah. And they're actively debating it. But it's not even just, so I represent, as you know, the large financial institutions, Andy, but it's also, you know, community banks are really getting hit hard. And acknowledging that I don't represent any of these institutions, but I'm very sympathetic towards their view. They are screaming that this new regulatory burden is really harming them. We've had no new community banks created in the United States since the crisis. That's not a good thing, because they serve a critically important role throughout the United States of America. And the fact that they're getting squeezed, they're getting put out of business, is also very discouraging. So there are other pieces of unintended consequence, but what's happening, not just the large financial institutions in terms of the impact of the regulatory posture on their growth prospects, and specifically the economic growth prospects of the American people, it's the small banks, too, who are also getting squeezed in a different way.
Yeah, and it's really important for people to understand. Again, I keep harping on this, because regulations, for most people, think, gross, I don't want to talk about it, I don't want to hear about it. But look, the fact is that smaller institutions can't pick up the price tag, right? And that's really one of the bigger issues, too, is because you got to hire compliance people. You know, you got to hire risk managers. Those are not contributors to the bottom line. Those are costs. And so for smaller companies or smaller financial entities, it's really tough to get over that profit hurdle when you got to hire these type of people. Granted, they do great work, but they still are a cost. Larger institutions can do it, but they got to cut back on doing certain things that are profitable as well. So that's part of the big problem. You know, we just and I'm glad you brought up Europe and some of the issues that they're dealing with. But we just had on CFTC Commissioner Christopher Giancarlo, and we reviewed the difficulty in syncing the rules between the United States and Europe. How big of a challenge does this present to your 18 CEOs?
This is a really big deal, and I've actually met with the commissioner and discussed it with him. And I think, by the way, he'll be an excellent member of the CFTC, just for the record. This is a big deal because we live in a global economy, and we need to get all the major jurisdictions to they don't have to the precise and exact same policy mechanisms. You got to have some alignment. So both on capital for one.
It's got to make sense. I mean, this is crazy. We're talking about two of the largest economies in the world, right? The United States and Europe as a whole, and you can't sync the financial regulations. That has got to be so disruptive and create so many problems.
It's a compliance burden. So let's say, for example, either on capital requirements or on derivative rules or on this whole issue of resolution planning. Those are kind of the big three. We need to have some global harmonization, because if you have one set of derivative rules, in the U.S., another in the U.K., another in the EU, think about that from a compliance standpoint. That's very challenging.
Yeah.
And putting aside the issue of financial stability going forward, if you had sharply different rules in the different jurisdictions, many experts think that could be the cause of a future financial crisis. That could be, what does it? Obviously, we hope that's not the case, and that's why a lot of important work has occurred, both at the G20 and in bilateral conversations, just to try to sync everything up as close as we can. And one interesting thing now with the new, we have some new commissioners at the CFTC.
Right.
One of the areas of disagreement with the U.S. and the EU has really been on this issue of the derivatives rules. And now with a new chairman at the CFTC, Massad, and some new, a couple of new commissioners there, we're hopeful that we can work with the Europeans in a way that we can align some of these regulations a little more quickly and with a little more effectiveness. So that's a key one. This whole issue of resolution planning is huge, because let's say we had a perfect resolution structure here, Andy, but in Europe or the EU, they had a totally contradictory one. Well, then we're going to be right back to where we were with the Lehman weekend, where we had one plan and then the FSA is like, no, I'm sorry, that's not going to work. So we need to. That's a really key point, and I know it's very technical, but the point is the EU and the UK and the US have to really be aligned on this issue of resolution.
Yeah, and Rod, thank you for bringing that up, because it's so important for people to understand that this stuff matters, right? When it hits the fan, right, and you're getting disagreement by regulators over how to handle a very dangerous situation, well, we know what the outcome is.
That's right.
All right. Well, Rob Nichols from the Financial Services Forum, thanks for coming on the show today and providing some perspective on this. I know it's not easy for most of our audience, myself included, to kind of wrap our heads around this, but it was really helpful. Thanks.
Happy to do it, Andy.
All right. Let's take a break. I'm Andy Bush. This is Engage.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. What does a visual workplace mean to you? How does it contribute to operational excellence? And what steps do you take to put it powerfully in place? Listen to The Visual Workplace, Work That Makes Sense, to find out. Each week, Dr. Gwendolyn Galsworth, visual workplace expert and award-winning author, shares tools and strategies to help you make the workplace speak at a glance without saying a word. Learn to work safer, faster, better, and at far less cost, no matter what business you're in. Tune in to The Visual Workplace every Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.